And you thought some things in life were going to be free. Too bad. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheik, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policies. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Barry. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to slough off some of this weight I've picked up now that winter has arrived. I don't know what kind of exercise I'm going to do to try to dump off this extra turkey weight, but we'll get to work on it.
Well, you might do what probably a lot of people are going to be doing after the first of the year, and that is work a couple of part-time jobs. I say that because, you know, as we all know, after the beginning of the year, some of the key employer liability mandates from Obamacare start kicking in. And I think people are going to start finding out that what they don't know is going to hurt them, specifically in the area of employment. As you know, and I think we talked about on an earlier program, Chuck, after the dust had settled on election night, the next day or two found a number of large employers laying off large numbers of workers in preparation for the increased expenses they were going to have with federal healthcare mandates. And, you know, that is not going to slow down once some of these mandatory features of Obamacare kick in at the first of the year.
Well, absolutely not, Barry. In fact, it's going to kick it. As a small business owner, I can tell you it's going to cost more money. We're going to have to raise prices because here's the deal. My company already doesn't buy my health insurance, and the mandate is sort of that my company is supposed to buy my health insurance. Well, if that happens, what's probably going to happen is I'll have to take a cut in pay in order to pay for the health insurance. As you're aware, you and I have talked about this because you're my sponsor, actually. You and I are both on the Samaritan plan, and they do not buy advertising on this radio station or on this radio show. But you and I are big proponents of the Samaritan Ministries plan.
Absolutely.
Which is a Christian cost-sharing plan. And frankly, my entire family is on that plan. Now, I have a daughter who has a healthcare plan because she's in management. And she's really the only one not on it. But my family is on it. It costs $355 a month. And I throw in extra to go to the special prayer needs every month to cover people who have expenses.
As do we on that. So, yeah.
And it's still, let's put it this way, we're under $400 a month. On my old standard plan, which paid for nothing and gave me a gigantic deductible, we were paying about $1,000 a month. Well, that's not sustainable, Barry, as you're well aware. It just can't be done.
Oh, I'm well aware of that. That's right.
And next year it was probably going to be about $1,300. The only way to keep that from happening is to switch insurance companies about every 3 or 4 years, which got to be a real pain because you have to go through the physical, you have to do this, you have to do that. And the fact is, now apparently that's not going to matter under Obamacare, and that's supposed to not cost anymore. Well, as you know, that's a joke. One of the reasons why companies don't cover pre-existing conditions is people try to come in with diabetes and cancer and heart disease and thrombotic issues and all kinds of results of a stroke, kidney disease and liver disease, and they want those things covered at some kind of a cost similar to a 28-year-old man with a family who doesn't smoke and doesn't drink. Well, that's an absurdity, Barry. As we get older, we become more of a risk.
Yes.
I realize that the reason I cost more to insure is because I'm 55 years old and pre-diabetic. I'm not kidding myself. And I have a family history of heart disease, even though I have shown exactly zero symptoms of it. And I've done that through diet and exercise. Nonetheless, I realize that I'm more of a risk. Now, AARP was jumping up and down at the re-election of Barack Obama because they were touting in their magazine that it's a wonderful thing because you can be 80 years old and buy health care for the same amount of money as a guy who's in his 20s. Well, all that's really going to do in the end is raise the price of the person in their 20s. Because, let's face it, when you're 80 years old, you are a health risk.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even if you're the healthiest person on earth, you are old, you are wearing out, and you have more of a chance of dying from something unexpected like a stroke or a heart attack or just old age. You go to sleep one night and you die. But chances are, as you get older, I never used to be on any pharmaceuticals. Now I take some thyroid medication, I take some high blood pressure medication, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more expensive to insure. I get that. I look at that as saying to myself, well, the alternative is not very attractive. I didn't want the government to intercede on my behalf and make it less expensive for me because I understand the dynamics. I didn't like paying $1,000 a month, and I found an alternative to that. But the fact is, I got it. And a lot of today's people don't get it.
Well, and before our listeners think that we're getting ready to start a telethon for you, Chuck, what we wanted to talk about on this, and that's right, is we just have to face the reality, ladies and gentlemen. We have to face the realities. There is no free lunch. There is no free health care. Everything comes with a cost. And because the fact that we are becoming an older society, and that's partially due to our position on abortion and the fact that over 50 plus million lives have been taken in this country since 1973. And goodness sakes, Chuck, we're going to be celebrating the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade coming up in January, an entire biblical generation of children destroyed. And we don't think that that's anything to do to raise the cost of our health care. This is like some many of the liberals who voted for Barack Obama thinking, oh, everything's going to be great. Well, some of them are finding out it's not so great already. And you brought this up to me. It's an article by Howie Carr in the Boston Herald. Yes, that's Boston, Massachusetts, ladies and gentlemen. That was on Sunday. And it's entitled Moonbat's Remorse. He says, for those, I don't even want to use the word, but he uses a word that I wouldn't use. For some Obama voters, repenting comes early. And he talks about the fact that most recently in Community College of Allegheny County in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the instructors, the faculty of that college, are finding that the college has decided that they're going to cut all the instructors' hours in order to get around Obamacare. In other words, as long as we keep you part-time, we don't have to mandatorily pay for your insurance. Funny, Chuck, I always thought community colleges were fairly liberal bastions, and most of the, and I may be wrong in this because it's been a while since I've been around a community college, but that most of the professors were usually members of the AAUP, which is the American Association of University Professors, which is a far leftist collective organization, and that they would be big-time Obama supporters.
Well, I have to laugh in this article. Here's a quote from it. One story had a quote from a CCAC, that's Community College of Allegheny County, in Pittsburgh. CCAC English instructor who had a quote-unquote vague hope that his health care insurance costs would be going down under Obamacare. Howie says further on down the page, now not only is he not going to be eligible for full insurance, he's taking a $600 a month pay cut because of his reduced hours. Howie says, I have a vague feeling, quote unquote, that he's not too happy.
Well, and that's happening more and more because you're seeing this, and it's going to be companies across the board, from this community college to large manufacturing employers to even small mom and pops, and you know, like you said with your company. What do? Do you have to take a pay cut? Do you reduce your hours or your employees' hours? I know for you that's not an issue because you are the employee.
Right.
And same with me, too. I'd love to be able to reduce my hours, but that just doesn't seem to work very well for me to keep a roof over my head and food on the table.
And that's the bottom line.
But the point is...
No, that's the bottom line. Remember, even probably there are a lot of bosses who are looking at this thing and saying, we're going to have to cut upper management pay and middle management pay alongside it because even though you've now lowered your workforce to all part-time, you've still got to take care of those insurance expenses, and they are going to increase drastically for middle and upper management. Salaried employees, there is no such thing as hour reduction because they're not paid by the hour. When you're on a salary, and a lot of lower echelon hourlies don't get this, you're on call for when they need you to work. If you're needed for 60 hours a week, you can either work the 60 hours a week they want you to work on a salary, or you can go find another job. Those are the two choices. And some companies, of course, back off on that when they find out they're losing their best employees who are going to work for someone who won't require them to work 60 hours a week. But then again, how will in the insurance picture change that dynamic? Nobody knows, Barry. We're jumping into the great unknown here. Now, Carr makes a good point that was going to, I think, your point.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's being kind of bombastic, and I'll tell you right up front, we're going to post this article. Howie Carr is very bombastic. He's also kind of funny if you read it. Here's what he says. Fortunately, all the women studies instructors at CCAC can pick up their insurance by getting jobs at, say, Olive Garden. But wait, I forgot. Many fast food and supermarket chains are also cutting back to work weeks of 29 hours maximum. And I think it's actually 28. That's to stay under that full-time limit.
Yes, because now, Chuck, we've become just like France, where 30-hour a week is considered full-time under Obamacare. And then, Chuck, if you take a look at France's economy, it's horrid, but they're based on a 30-hour work week. If you work 30 hours, you're full-time and you get all the benefits. Well, guess what? The vast majority of folks in France work less than 30 hours a week.
Yep.
That's the reason why they have all that time on their hands for all the protests and the riots and other things, and maybe just sitting around drinking coffee in front of the Eiffel Tower, too. But the point is, Chuck, you know, we're in an economy right now. We're in a post-industrial economy. The service economy has become huge in this country because of convenience, but there are only so many service and convenience jobs that you can create before you actually have to have some more serious jobs that are underwriting all these other convenience jobs.
Well, Barry, the question is, how many insurance, accounting, and banking firms can there be when there's no manufacturing for people to be able to afford to buy insurance, put their money in the bank, and hire accountants? Sure, the accountants can work for the banks and the insurance companies, but nobody else can afford to pay them. Eventually, service economies collapse because there's no base.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to get at, is there's no base to support it.
And that's what we're rapidly going to. I noticed even in Ohio, it used to be Ohio had more or less a recession-proof economy.
Well, that's gone the way of the dodo bird.
That's right. The minute the economy catches cold, Ohio's got a fever. I lived in Michigan for 11 years, and let me tell you, anytime somebody sneezes, the economy sneezes, Michigan's in full-blown fever and looking really hard at some hospital time. I lived in a GM town that is virtually a ghost town these days. You know, Lansing is not in good shape because so much of GM has shut down. That used to be the center for Oldsmobile manufacturing. Well, guess what? Oldsmobiles, there aren't any such things anymore. That has not done well for the central Michigan economy. And as these companies cut back and cut back and cut back and hire fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer full-time workers, that cost, somebody's got to pay the cost for welfare state. Who's it going to be? You can't continue to tax the rich, because then you kill off any chance of reigniting manufacturing, your manufacturing base. And or even service economy begins to suffer because there's nobody around. I mean, you can only charge so much for insurance, because people working two part-time jobs, one at the gas station and one at the grocery store, they're going to be skipping something in order to put food on the table. And chances are that's some kind of life insurance or other kinds of insurance. They're going to skimp on homeowners. They're going to skimp someplace. They got to start cutting corners. Again, we're walking into the great unknown. And what was supposed to be a great boon to the economy, it looks like it's going to turn into a great concrete block tied around the leg of a swimmer, the swimming economy. And the economy looks like it's going to be sinking fast, very quickly. And now we have Republican lawmakers who are sitting around talking about how we need to increase taxes. Well, okay, guys, if you want to give in and play the game, then do that. But when you're sitting on the cusp of a depression and you raise taxes, does that really sound like a sound fiscal policy?
What it is, Chuck, you're no longer on the cusp of the depression. You're down in the bowl of it.
Well, that's right. Yeah, forget it. You have taken the leap into the chasm. And that looks like really what we're preparing to do. Now, it'll be interesting to watch what happens in the first 6 months of 2013. I don't think we're going to find it pretty. And who will the news media blame? That's the real question.
Oh, well, the news media will blame conservative Republicans. We know that. That's a mantra. we didn't have to guess who's going to get the blame here.
Yeah.
When they're going to be ignoring people like Howie Carr pointed this out in his article, he said that the one person they're not going to look at are people like George Lucas of Star Wars fame, who just sold his studio to Disney for $4.05 billion in order to beat the tax Armageddon on January the 1st. Basically, they think he saved more than $200 million by selling early.
Yeah, But then Howie goes on to explain, unfortunately, Barry, we're out of time, but he goes on to explain why that may not have been such a wise strategy after all. That, yeah, he saved it up front, but it looks like it's going to cost him at the back end anyway with the increases that are coming.
And so, I'm sure that many of the limousine liberals in Hollywood and in D.C., once they actually get their tax bill, won't be so happy about Fearless Leader anymore.
No, as we predicted. Well, that being said, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.